I didn't say anything to that. I looked up to the sky and then closed my eyes and for the first time started to pray. I prayed for the crews of the ships above me. I prayed for the colonists below me. I prayed for John and Jane, for Gretchen and her father, for Magdy and for Enzo and their families, for Hickory and Dickory. I prayed for General Gaw. I prayed for everyone. I prayed. Zoe, Hickory said. I opened my eyes. Thank you for the invitation, I said. I regret I must decline. Hickory was silent. Thank you, Hickory, I said. Really, thank you. But I am right where I belong. Part 3. 20. Admit it, Enzo said, through the PDA. You forgot. I did not, I said, with what I hoped was just the right amount of indignation to suggest that I had not forgotten, which I had. I can hear the fake indignation, he said. Rats, I said. You're on to me, finally. Finally? There's no finally, Enzo said. I've been on to you since I met you. Maybe you have, I allowed. And anyway, that doesn't solve this problem, Enzo said. We're about to sit down for dinner. You're supposed to be here, not to make you feel guilty or anything. This was the difference between me and Enzo now and then. There used to be a time when Enzo would have said those words, and they would have come out sounding like he was accusing me of something, besides, of course, being late. But right now, they were gentle and funny. Yes, he was exasperated, but he was exasperated in a way that suggested I might be able to make it up to him, which I probably would if he didn't push it. I am, in fact, racked with guilt, I said. Good, Enzo said, because you know we put a whole extra potato in the stew for you. Gracious, I said, a whole potato. And I promised the twins they could throw their carrots at you, he said, referring to his little sisters, because I know how much you love carrots, especially when they're kid-hurled. I don't know why anyone would eat them any other way, I said. And after dinner, I was going to read you a poem I wrote for you, Enzo said. I paused. Now that's not fair, I said, injecting something real into our witty banter. Sorry, Enzo said. Did you really? I asked. You haven't written me a poem in ages. I know, he said. I thought I might get back into practice. I remember you kind of liked it. You jerk, I said. Now I really do feel guilty for forgetting about dinner. Don't feel too guilty, Enzo said. It's not a very good poem. It doesn't even rhyme. Well, that's a relief, I said. I still felt giddy. It's nice to get poems. I'll send it to you, Enzo said. You can read it instead. And then, maybe if you're nice to me, I'll read it to you, dramatically. What if I'm mean to you? I asked. Then I'll read it melodramatically, he said. I'll wave my arms and everything. You're making a case for me being mean to you, I said. Hey, you're already missing dinner, Enzo said. That's worth an arm wave or two. Jerk, I said. I could almost hear him smile over the PDA. Gotta go, Enzo said. Mom's telling me to set the table. Do you want me to try to make it? I asked. All of a sudden, I really did want to be there. I can try. You're going to run across the entire colony in 5 minutes, Enzo said. I could do it, I said. Maybe Babar could, Enzo said, but he has 2 legs more than you. Fine, I said. I'll send Babar to have dinner with you. Enzo laughed. Do that, he said. I'll tell you what, Zoe. Walk here at a reasonable pace, and you'll probably make it in time for dessert. Mom made a pie. Yay, pie, I said. What kind? I think it's called Zoe Gets Whatever Kind of Pie She Gets and Likes It Pie, Enzo said. Mmm, I said. I always like that kind of pie. Well, yeah, Enzo said. It's right there in the title. It's a date, I said. Good, Enzo said. Don't forget. I know that's a problem for you. jerk, I said. Check your mail queue, Enzo said. There might be a poem there. I'm going to wait for the hand waving, I said. That's probably for the best, Enzo said. It'll be better that way. And now my mom is glaring at me with laser eyeballs. I have to go. Go, I said. See you soon. Okay, Enzo said. Love you. We had started saying that to each other recently. It seemed to fit. Love you too, I said, and disconnected. You two make me want to vomit so hard, Gretchen said. She'd been hearing my side of the conversation and had been rolling her eyes the whole time. We were sitting in her bedroom. I set down the PDA and whacked her with a pillow. You're just jealous Magdy never says that to you. Oh, dear Lord, Gretchen said. Leaving aside the fact that I so do not want to hear that from him, if he ever did try to say that to me, his head would actually explode before the words could even get out of his mouth. Which, now that I think about it, might be an excellent reason to try to get him to say it. You two are so cute, I said. I can see you two standing at the altar and getting into it right before saying I do. Zoe, if I ever get anywhere near an altar with Magdy, I authorize you to make a flying tackle and drag me away, Gretchen said. Oh, fine, I said. Now, let's never speak of this again, Gretchen said. You're so in denial, I said. At least I'm not the one who forgot her dinner date, Gretchen said. It gets worse, I said. He wrote me poetry. He was going to read it to me. You missed dinner and a show, Gretchen said. You are the worst girlfriend ever. I know, I said. I reached for my PDA. I'll write him an apology note saying that. Make it extra grovelly, Gretchen said, because that's sexy. That comment explains a lot about you, Gretchen, I said. And then my PDA took on a life of its own, blasting an alarm sound from its speaker and scrolling an air attack notice on its screen. Over on Gretchen's desk, her PDA made the same alarm sound and scrolled the same message. Every PDA in the colony did the same. In the distance, we heard the sirens, posted near the Mennonite homesteads, alerting them because they didn't use personal technology. For the first time since the defeat of the Conclave fleet, Roanoke was under attack. Missiles were on their way. I rushed to the door of Gretchen's room. Where are you going? She asked. I ignored her and went outside, where people were bursting out of their homes and running for cover, and looked into the sky. What are you doing? Gretchen said, catching up with me. We need to get to a shelter. Look, I said, and pointed. In the distance, a bright needle of light was tracing across the sky, aiming at something we couldn't quite see. Then there was a flash, blinding white. There was a defense satellite above Roanoke. It had fired on and hit one of the missiles coming for us, but others were still on their way. The sharp pop of the missile explosion reached us, with not nearly enough time lag. Come on, Zoe, Gretchen said, and started tugging at me. We've got to go. I stopped looking at the sky and ran with Gretchen to one of the community shelters we had recently excavated and built. It was filling up quickly with colonists. As I ran, I saw Hickory and Dickory, who had spotted me. They closed in and took either side of me as we got into the shelter. Even in the panic, people still made room for them. Gretchen, Hickory, Dickory, about 4 dozen other colonists and I all hunched down in the shelter, straining to hear what was going on above us through nearly 12 feet of dirt and concrete. What do you think is happening? Someone said, and then there was unspeakable wrenching noise, like someone had taken one of the cargo containers that made up the colony wall and peeled it apart, right on top of our eardrums. And then I was tumbling to the ground because there was an earthquake, and I screamed and bet that everyone else in the shelter did too. But I couldn't hear it because then came the single loudest noise I had ever heard, so loud that my brain surrendered and the noise became the absence of noise. And the only way I knew that I, at least, was still screaming was that I could feel my throat getting raw. Either Hickory or Dickory grabbed me and held me steady. I could see Gretchen being held the same way by the other Oban. The lights in the shelter flickered, but stayed on. Eventually I stopped screaming, and the ground stopped shaking, and something similar to my hearing came back to me, and I could hear others in the shelter crying and praying and trying to calm children. I looked over at Gretchen, who looked stricken. I disentangled from Dickory, it turned out, and went over to her. "You okay?" I asked. My voice sounded like it was pushed through cotton from a distance. Gretchen nodded, but didn't look at me. It occurred to me it was the first time she'd been in an attack. I looked around. Most of the people in the shelter looked like Gretchen. It was the first time any of these people had been in an attack. Of all these people, I was the one who was the veteran of a hostile attack. I guess that put me in charge. I saw a PDA on the floor. Someone had dropped it. I picked it up and activated it and read what was there. Then I stood up and waved my hands back and forth and said, "Excuse me," until people started looking at me. I think enough people recognized me as the daughter of the colony leaders that they decided I might know something after all. "The emergency information on the PDA says that the attack seems to be over," I said when enough people were looking my way. "But until we get an all-clear signal, we need to stay here in the shelter. We need to stay here and stay calm. Is anyone here injured or sick?" "I can't hear very well," someone said. "I don't think any of us can hear well right now," I said. "That's why I'm yelling." It was an attempt at a joke. I don't think people were going for it. "Are there any injuries here besides hearing loss?" No one said anything or raised their hand. "Then let's just sit tight here and wait for the all clear." I held up the PDA I was using. "Whose is this?" Someone raised their hand. I asked if I could borrow it.